I think it's pretty well decided now, as a matter of national policy, that some kind of tax inducements are necessary. But the popular fallacy is that they alone can turn the tide. They can't. This is a very strong tide, which is not going with us. And I do not believe that it can be turned alone by cutting taxes. However, an individual income tax is desirable because next year we face very heavy increases. We face an increase in the Social Security tax, and we face a real increase which will diminish our standard of living because we're all, by virtue of taking in more dollars, put in higher income tax brackets. And so, though our living standard is not improved, we are subject to more taxes because of the progressive income tax rates. And it's something called the bracket creep. So, a modest tax decrease to compensate for those factors is in order. And that's been set, generally speaking, at around 10%. And similarly, too, we all understand that it is necessary, in order to modernize the American industrial machine, to accelerate the rate at which it can be depreciated for tax purposes. And so that's generally understood, that we will accelerate depreciation for capital, which is invested in machinery, equipment, plants, which are job-producing, in order to encourage a greater activity and greater expenditure in that regard. And that may have some effect, we believe it will, on the very drastic decline in U.S. productivity. And in that connection, I might say that we in New York must try very hard to give a priority in respect to those tax incentives for investment in areas of substantial unemployment from which we suffer, in areas like Buffalo and New York City and other areas in our state. Those are two very prominent ones. We are materially above the national average in employment. And I spoke before of being a have-not state. This is one of the ways in which the United States tax system may help us to attract some business which we otherwise might not attract. But there are other problems which we have, which are very serious, which we're learning. For example, in the Senate, I have been in charge, because of my responsibilities in a given committee, of unemployment compensation. And I know the price tag when unemployment goes up by a million. It's in the general area of $20 billion. That's a horrendous figure. And one of the things that's agitated me the most is the fact that you pay unemployment compensation to people who are idle. And on the whole, Americans don't want to be idle. Oh, there's a lot of gold bricking, and there's a lot of faking. But in percentage, I assure you, it's in numbers high, but in percentage, it's not. Americans, on the whole, are willing to work and anxious to work. The difficulty is that we have no system by which the unemployment period, if a person really can't find a job, can be utilized for upgrading skills and engaging in improvement in education. There are still far too many Americans who don't have high school diplomas, and we live in a society where that is almost intolerable and unacceptable. And so I hope that this organization, representing the business community of one of the most advanced states of the Union, may think about that and perhaps come up with some ideas by which in periods of unemployment we may find a way through business to finance education where it's required up to a minimal standard and training to upgrade services. Similarly, there are other responsibilities business has got to think about. For example, women now are 50% of the workforce. However, many women are drawing what's called AFDC, that is Aid for Dependent Children, some 11 million in the country, many of whom wish to work but can't because of those little kids, and no place to farm them out because we are gravely deficient in daycare slots in this country. In most other countries of the world, daycare is a responsibility of the individual parent, where the mother's children can be looked after until the mother is finished with work. Again, something for a state like ours and a business community like ours to very seriously think about. And if we can do those things, then we ought to make it possible, also through some tax advantages for employers, to think about that very seriously. Also, we have a tremendous problem in this country with unemployed youth. One of the great reasons for street crime is that in the core areas of the great cities, like what we want to call our Big Six in New York State, there are unemployment rates which run as high as 60, 70, and 80%. Just think of it. Think of the prospect for a kid, especially a minority child, in that situation. And then account for that in terms of our crime statistics. Now, again, we have tried an experiment with youth in the veterans of Vietnam. And we have given a credit, a special credit, of half the first year's salary for how at hiring such an employee. Again, that would depend for success upon business. And we have some laws now maturing, looking toward that kind of eventuation for American business. And I would again suggest thoughtful consideration by an organization like this of what possibilities reside in those situations. And finally, our cities are in terrible shape. We have considered in the Congress the financial situation of New York City in 1975, which, by the way, almost brought down the state's credit as well at that time. And we considered again in 1978. And aside from all our other troubles financially, you had the practical proposition that in terms of deteriorating roads, streets, bridges, water tunnels, transportation systems, and other parts of the municipal infrastructure, all these cities were living on a time bomb, which could blow up at any time. In many cases, maintenance had not been active and effective for a century. Just think of it, for a century. And so we need to consider some ways in which these cities may be helped with their infrastructure problems. One of the suggestions, which is a bill of my own, relates to the establishment of a national bank for community conservation, operating like the World Bank, which would utilize the indebtedness of individual municipalities as a basis for financing with the investment. Now, there are many other things that this organization can do. For example, we are a very big exporting state. You know, we throw a lot of rocks at what's called foreign aid. But the fact is that New York exports about $750 million a year worth of products, which is bought with foreign aid. It also is a fact that now 40% of U.S. exports go to less developed countries, the so-called poor countries, which are the subject of foreign aid. So it's not all a sterile, do-good proposition, many would have us believe. But be that as it may, we also face tough competition abroad from the Japanese, the Germans, and many other countries, including rather smallish countries like Taiwan and Korea and Brazil. And we are gravely disadvantaged in that competition through the operation of the United States antitrust laws, which are particularly invidious through American business competing abroad. Again, a subject which I strongly suggest is proper for consideration and action by an organization like this. And finally, the establishment of better relations between management and labor. I hope very much, I might say to your president, that you will look into what's happening right in our state. In three cities in our state, Elmira, Jamestown, and Buffalo, there have been established labor management committees to consider the problems of labor and management in terms of morale and in terms of those things which bedevil effective productive action, i.e. absenteeism, alcoholism, drug addiction, and general disinterest and boredom with a job. And in those cases, labor climates in our state are being transformed so that a business which might otherwise be attractive to some other part of the country because of theoretical lower wage scales, or because of no union organization, or because of some other attraction which the local state, which the state or the local community may extend, would be interested in remaining here or in coming here, where the core of workers was so high level and where the labor climate was so good. And again, I hope very much, and I say this to your officers, that they will look into these particular problems. Now, you will notice, and I shall close in a few moments, you will notice that in all of this, I have not spoken as yet about the popular shibboleths, the tighter federal budgets, regulatory reform, the deregulation of certain industries. For example, we're looking now to the deregulation of railroads, and a different division of authority between the states and the nation in the federal system. That these, rather than those matters which I have been discussing, are the roots of our problem. The fact is that it isn't so, and now, and this is really new revelation, nobody claims any longer that it's so. The fact is that both major parties agree upon what's called the reindustrialization of America, which essentially are new outlooks, new concepts, new ways of doing things, to help ourselves rather than the theory that standing alone, certainly these things are very useful. We should run a tight ship. We should have deregulation to encourage competition. We should not have excessive paperwork or excessive regulation of individual enterprises, etc. But question, will that solve our problem? And the answer is, it's an element, but it will not. But these other matters which we've discussed will really get to the guts of the structural problems which we face in this country. We're a young and better, vigorous country. We're the most formidable force, actually and potentially, that mankind has ever created on this earth. And yet, to the rest of the world, we seem like a giant, all tangled up in our own processes, and unable to manifest our strength. And the great British statesman once said, in respect of a punitive filibuster going on in the Parliament in Britain, that the way to resume is to resume. And that's why I looked with such great satisfaction upon this new organization, because I think you have come precisely at the right moment to help our state very materially and by example to help our nation. And I'd like to give you only one word of advice. I have sat on many occasions in what's called leadership meetings with presidents. All presidents do it. When they have a problem, they will call a dozen, generally, of the so-called leaders on campus. Capitol Hill, with particular attention to the problem. If it's foreign relations, or if it's labor, or whatever it might be, they'll have a few people in who are specialists in that area. And when the president is through presenting the problem, and the questions have been asked, and the discussion has been held, the president generally goes around the table to give everybody one last word of whatever that person wants to say. And on one occasion, with one of the presidents whom I love very much, when he came to me, I said, "Mr. President, be bold." And that's what I tell this organization. Thank you very much.
That is the 30%. Well, I think it would be inflationary. I've said that many times.
Okay.
And I believe that it will not result in a recoupment of what it costs within a sufficient time to make it non-inflationary.
Okay.
It's been generally, it's been said a lot that Congresswoman Holtzman is will draw votes for you, or that she's your biggest problem in this campaign. What can you say about her that why she wouldn't serve as a good senator?
Well, let's have the campaign when we have it. It hasn't quite opened yet, and I will deal with my opponents when the time comes.
Who do you see as your main opponent in this race?
Well, I see both opponents as main opponents.
Why do you say the campaign hasn't quite opened?
Well, because we haven't, you know, actually gotten into the discussion. Everybody's just recovering from the primary.
Senator, I sat up in Albany this afternoon. D'Amato was up before the state committee.
Yeah.
And at that meeting, he said that he'd been down to Washington this morning and talked to John Hines.
Yeah.
That John invited him to a reception tomorrow night at his home. That he had met the club, or the league, all the important people,
yeah.
And that on Wednesday morning he would be meeting with Howard Baker and John Hines,
right,
on the money issue.
Right.
Is he going to get it?
I have no idea.
What do you hear?
It's up to the campaign committee, and they'll decide.
Do you feel betrayed by those people and all of a sudden jumping over to the D'Amato camp?
No, they're party regulars, and they're doing what comes naturally.
Senator, are you going to change your campaign commercials? You said that you thought you had made some mistakes. Do you think
when you say change, of course we're going to have new ones if I can afford it.
I mean, not dwell on the age bit.
If whatever I can afford, I will spend on the media. And what we'll have, I do not know yet. What we'll, develop, what we think, my staff and I think, is appropriate to the issues which will be for the electorate.
Do you think it's time to get tough, since Mr. D'Amato got tough and seemed to benefit from doing so?
One must always be himself. And myself has always been to deal with the issues and to satisfy the people that I can deal with them best for their own security and their own future. I've been too much of a tennis player to adopt the other fellow's game.
Let me go back.
I'll play my own.
Senator, let me go back to what I was going to want to finish this thing.
Yeah.
D'Amato said that he had the feeling that they were looking him over,
yeah,
and that they were planning to have some more looking overs. What if he doesn't pass muster? Is it likely that they might find him an embarrassment as a Republican?
I can't say that. I can't say that at all. I just don't.
State,
I think we have to wait and see how the campaign eventuates.
State's business community.
I'll say this, I think it's a different ballgame. Election is a very different ballgame. There's a different constituency. It wants to know different things about the candidates. And as far as I'm concerned, it shall know them.
Senator,
yeah,
the state's business community has largely been a Republican community.
Yeah.
How do you get them to come along with you about that?
Well, I've largely been a Republican for a long, long time, longer than most of them. And I've had four elections and re-elections as a Republican candidate. so I come by it naturally, and they do too. I don't think I need to get them. Oh, I don't think the liberal line is going to bother them. I think they're going to bother people generally. I think if people want to vote for me, they'll find me there. But there's no commitment to the Liberal Party or to the Liberal Party's candidate for president. I have none, and no voter does. If he wishes to vote for me, he will.
Senator, do you plan to address...
And then he can vote for whoever he pleases as president.
Do you plan to address the future of the Republican Party, where you think it's going? I mean, you've lost some of your campaign. Aides are saying that you would have lost in a primary 6 years ago if Nelson Rockefeller wasn't a power.
Who can dream that? I wish we had Nelson here to testify, but unfortunately we don't.
Well,
so who knows why?
Are you going to make an appeal to what we would call, or what you would call, a more progressive wing of the party?
I will make an appeal to the people of the state of New York.
Many economists have said that the 10% tax cut is a halfway measure, and that shock treatment is needed to reverse the economy.
Well, I believe the shock treatment, which is needed to... I don't use that word. But I believe that we need a tax cut which is 50-50, business and individual. And I believe a targeted tax cut for business requires the highest priority, which means accelerated depreciation and treatment of investment tax credit in a way which will encourage capital investment. Treatment of savings the same way. We are now exempting $200 of interest. We may have to do more. And other inducements to business, especially to deal with the joblessness of the minority youth.
Do you think this is not a halfway measure, that many candidates have said the same thing?
I said when I spoke today that that's not the sole answer. We have to deal with structural problems in the economy, some of which I described. But insofar as taxes are concerned, I believe that's the way to go.
Senator, I'm sorry to keep raising Mr. D'Amato, but he also said today that he perceives in a three-way race, a 51% plus victory for himself.
Yeah.
You want to make any...
No. No. I'll tell you, we're dealing with a very intelligent public in New York, and I'm sure that they will unravel this whole situation come November 4th. Whatever it may be, the unraveling, I hope, will suit me, but it may not. Who knows?
Senator, you spent a lot of time in the primary in Washington saying that there were things there that required you to be there. You're going back to Washington from here. I think there may be some people on your staff who think that you maybe should spend some more time in the state. Do you plan to spend more time campaigning? Is that one of the problems that you had in the primary?
No, I don't think it was one of the problems in the primary. But I'm prepared to give whatever time seems suitable to campaigning, bearing in mind that there's a lot going on in the national capital which concerns the people of my state. And I have to deal with that as it builds up all the time, including tomorrow, which concern housing, health, education, peace. Just to give you a little example of tomorrow, we have a higher education conference. I'm one of the conferees. Where we'll be considering the president's new targeting plan for nuclear weaponry. I'm the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee. There's a very threatening amendment to New York City's financing in a HUD appropriation bill. How can I stay home?
You don't feel that out of 24 years of being in Washington, maybe you deserve 2 months in New York?
I deserve to do what the people require, and I think our people are intelligent enough, but I will give a good deal of time to New York.
Senator,
I didn't cheat on it in the primary. That wasn't the reason that I didn't prevail.
What was the reason you didn't prevail?
Well, I believe that the Republicans who voted didn't feel that they wanted me to be their candidate. That's the reason I didn't prevail.
Is that because
apparently
the
I didn't
changed?
Persuade a majority?
Has the liberal Republican wing of the party in the state
I
died?
Don't I wouldn't say that. I really don't know. I rather suspect that other issues should have been discussed instead of those which did seem to take so much time. And I'll learn from that experience in the general election.
What are the issues that you thought were too much time was spent on?
I will deal with it. I'll demonstrate it to you when we start the campaign.
You don't mean age and health, do you? You don't mean age and health, sir?
I don't wish to define it. Mm-hmm. We'll get to it, and you'll see if there is a difference, and I think there will be. You'll see what I do when I do it.
Senator, it's been suggested this is the time to call in some of the chits that you've had over 24 years of doing things for different groups. Is that what your plan is in the next couple of months?
My dear lady, when I confer with my assistants about my plan, I tell them, and I'll try to figure out the best plan possible.
That's to say that you don't have a plan right now for the November election?
No, I do have a plan, and I will carry it out.
Would you like to tell us about
it? No, ma'am.
Have you talked money with Ray Harding?
Again, you know, Ray Harding is the leader of the Liberal Party, and what we had to talk about includes finance. That's all I can tell you.
Have they indicated how much they're prepared to
tell you anything about that. You must go to him.
Senator, have you not, then, since the primary is only a week over, have you not done anything in that time? It sounds like either you haven't or you're not willing to talk about it.
Well, I think we've done a great deal. The labor people are circulating a petition which has to come in by midnight tomorrow. Checking an independent line, it seems to me that's an awful lot. And then I've done my utmost to take account of what happened and to learn.
Joyce Moon, please.
Can you talk about the financial, if you can afford commercials, if you can afford this? How bad is the financial picture?
Well, one can't tell you. I have to raise money to run a campaign, which is appreciable. But having raised $900,000 in the primary, I believe I can raise the necessary money for the general election.
And what
maybe not as much as I would like, but I think what's
the ballpark
do a
figure?
Good job.
DeMato's ballpark figure says he needs at least $1 million. Yeah. What's yours?
I think that's a fair figure. I don't know that I can get it, and I don't know that it's absolutely required. That's it. Seems to me. Okay?
Thank you, sir.
Thank you all very much.
Sleep quick and fly early.
No, come on. Unfortunately, it's awful early.